listening to Puck and Roll.
Welcome to episode 8 of the Puck and Roll podcast, season 2. This is a very, very exciting one, as we have a very special guest on the show. Max Dumont, welcome on.
You absolutely nailed the pronunciation there. That was fantastic. That was some high quality.
I'm a Montrealer. I'm from Montreal.
Exactly. It's better than the Mark Dumonti that I get often. So yeah, I appreciate
Mark Dumonti?
That.
Oof.
Yeah, well, when I was younger, we'd know it would be scam artists or just people annoying us when they'd ask for, my father was called Jean. So they'd ask for Jean Dumonti. So when they asked for Jean Dumonti, we knew it was time to hang up. So I appreciate the effort there.
Perfect. And for those who don't know, which is maybe one person listening, Mark is currently covers the Habs for Montreal Hockey Now. And he also is involved with Game Over Montreal, which is part of the Steve Dangle podcast network. And joining us today are Aaron Idovich and Joshua Rosa. Welcome back on the show, guys. Nice to have you as always. So for this episode, let's kick it off with just talking about how the Habs have been in the past few games, let's say like the 5 games. Mark, what are some of the trends that you've been seeing with the team that you've found interesting?
It's been a pretty crazy season all around. I feel like even the only thing, and we'll get to that, that's been somewhat consistent, you've got goaltending and maybe the top line, but everything else has been pretty much chaos, right? And you get, for a little while, for example, we saw, who was he playing with, Josh Henderson? It was Monahan and Dvorak, right? Was that correct?
It was Monahan, Dadanov.
Dadanov, yes. Yeah. Okay. So they were producing fantastic numbers. Like at one point I was so excited because I thought, okay, so since Doc has been on the top line, you're seeing great, great, great underlying numbers. They've actually cooled off a little bit, but there's been no secondary scoring for the Canadians this year, right, guys? Like it hasn't been not consistent. It's been almost invisible.
Non-existent.
So, yeah. When we see some secondary scoring coming, like we saw at the beginning, maybe about 5 games ago, I was getting pretty excited, but that dropped off pretty quickly. I would love to see a little more consistency in the second and third lines. But to me, the biggest thing that I've noticed is since Mike Matheson has returned and since Joel Edmondson has returned, let's be perfectly honest, the team has been much worse defensively. And that's not just the eye test. That's statistically speaking, that's quite accurate. And again, it's really harsh because these guys, Matheson's played, maybe 30 minutes since coming back? And this is 10 games for Joel Edmondson, but I find it incredibly interesting that it's the rookies holding the fort for the Canadians. They're the ones putting up great numbers. And to me, if I'm Ken Hughes, I look at this and I say, all right, I'm gonna move one of my veteran defensemen. And obviously I wouldn't move Matheson. And obviously, people will say Weidman, but statistically he's been better than both of those guys. So
yeah,
I think the play from the rookies recently and the unfortunate underwhelming results from the veterans has been kind of the exciting story in the last week, and it opens up options. You have to save Caden Gooley at some point. Like, let's not I don't want to insult David Savall, but let's be perfectly honest here. If you had an ideal team, I'm not even sure if he'd be on your third pairing, right? Like I think he's doing as good as he could in the situation with what he has, but they have to get Caden Gooley away from him. So we saw that start there with Edmondson. That was a disaster. When Edmondson was with Jack Eye, it was a disaster. When Edmondson, there's a recurring theme here with Edmondson, right? So I look forward to Savall finally getting a decent, reliable defensive partner. And I look forward to seeing if Kovacevic and Harris can carry this throughout. And let's be honest, the best third pairing we've had this year, or we've seen, sorry, has been Chris Weidman and Arber Jack Eye. So, it's funny, but it leaves Edmondson as the odd man out there in the grand scheme of things.
And there's a lot of teams looking for basically Joel Edmondson right now as well, right? Like that big,
you
steady
were about to
defenseman.
describe you're about to describe his qualities, but yeah, they're looking for a Joel Edmondson. Exactly. You know, there's so many teams that think they're too soft or blah blah blah, and they can just
Toronto
plug him
and
in.
Ottawa, right? Like Toronto, Ottawa are looking for that exact mold, and I'd be shocked to hear if they hadn't called on Joel Edmondson.
I know that Ottawa has been really active in that sense. Now, I will say this. The Leafs try to avoid dealing with the Montreal Canadiens.
Understandably.
And it is exactly for the reason you'd think. So I don't want to get into too much details with it, but you know that whole handshake line quote, which is one of the funniest things a coach has ever said?
Yep.
We got more respect in it. Well, they really took that loss of the Canadiens to heart. So they're going to avoid trading with the Canadiens if they can. And I'm not joking about this. I know it sounds a little bit kind of, you know, silly.
Petty.
Yeah, petty as well. But yeah, they're not going to look to the Canadiens to get more respect in the handshake line. That's basically what their game plan is.
Which makes sense. But if you look at their defensive core right now, right, like it is a problem when you have Justin Hall playing 25 minutes a night right now. Like that is... calling for his head, like,
and is
a month
Mete
ago.
Mete's playing a like, and I love Victor Mete. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I think he's interesting, but he's never been a positive possession player, right? So, yeah, it's good. But you know what's the crazy part? I look at the Leafs, and I actually think they need more help up front, even as bad as their defense has been. You get away from the big four, and there's been no offensive production there. So
they acquire a guy that couldn't even crack the Coyotes lineup. Like,
I mean, look,
yeah, who was that? I had to
Timmons,
Connor Timmons, which was a good trade from my perspective, like a really good trade because they traded away Curtis Douglas, Mr. 6'9", who got bullied by Xavier Simoneau in the AHL.
I remember that. It was like a honey badger jumping on the back of a rhino there. Yep. Yeah.
Beautiful play. And they traded him for Connor Timmons, who is an injury-prone former first-round pick.
Second-round pick.
Was he like 30?
No, you know why overall? He was a second-round pick? Because back then there were 31 teams.
Yeah, 32nd overall.
Second? Oh, my God. Okay.
I know. I'm such a pedant.
So close.
Actually, he was the 32nd overall. You know, I'll say this. I think that overall, Kyle Dubas has done an excellent job with the Toronto Maple Leafs, and I think it's funny, you know, to watch them fail miserably over and over, like some sort of perverted hockey version of Groundhog Day. Like it's so exciting. It's so fun for everyone else except for Leafs fans. But if I was him, I would have done the same moves, and I would have also held the fort with those decisions. Like, okay, there were some bad ones, Foligno and all that.
Foligno.
I think this offseason was brutal for him.
Okay, well, yeah, but I actually think getting rid of the Mrazek thing, that was the move to make. But however, you lost out on Owen Beck there, right?
Exactly. And lost out on Lane Hudson. They were very high on Owen Beck. Like from everything I've heard, Owen Beck would have been their guy at 25.
So
and Owen Beck would have been a way better player than Kyle Yarncroke for their third line.
Oh God, yes. Oh God, yes. And I'll say this: I was speaking to Owen's agent Dan, and he was telling me like they were convinced they had bought basically, you know, some gear because you want to wear that gear when the team has you involved, like you want to give it to all your family and stuff. But they thought for sure the Leafs were going, and they were essentially packing their bags to go to Toronto. So that worked out incredibly well for the Canadians. And I'll say this about Owen Beck: when I was at the draft in Buffalo, I was having some beers with some guys that work with the Sabres, and anytime I mentioned the word Beck or Hudson, ears perked up at other tables because you had the Leafs were just a table over, the Sens were just a table over. You had there were like four or five teams of scouts just there, and I could tell that these guys were pretty annoyed that the Canadians had a killer draft. So you know, it all worked out for the Montreal Canadiens. But going back to it, we're probably not going to see a deal between the Habs and the Leafs anytime soon,
which does make a lot of sense. And speaking of potential deals, the Montreal Canadiens have gotten quite incredible goaltending this season. Except for that one game against Buffalo, Jake Allen's been tremendous. Samuel Montembeau is, I believe, tied for sixth in the league in save percentage.
Second coming of Jesus Christ.
This is not a goaltending tandem that should be good.
But no, absolutely not.
They've been excellent. And they are a big reason that the Habs are over 500 after 20 games. Firstly, what do you think of that tandem, Mark? But and secondly, is this something that the Habs can weaponize and get like a lot of value for a player that may not have had too much value even as early as like a month ago?
Well, I mean, to me, Montembeau, hey, listen, I'll be honest. That to me was a tank move, right? You know, like signing him was a tank move, and it's kind of backfired. And great for him, because when we look at it, we always talk about the primes of certain players. So statistically speaking, a forward is between 20 and 24, right? And it goes, you know, it could go up to 28. Good players buck the trend, but for goalies, you're actually lining it up closer to 28 to 32. You know, which is what we thought it was 10 years ago about players, but that still applies to goalies. So I'm looking at Montembeau thinking, hey, maybe, just maybe this guy could be kind of a stopgap measure until guys like Verbedic or Dickow or Dobesh are ready to come in the league. But at the same time, if I'm the Montreal Canadiens, I have Jake Allen on the market right now. Like I wouldn't hesitate.
Absolutely.
And you know, not just at the deadline, because at the deadline, you're pretty much set there. But right now, there's some teams that are panicking. There's some teams that are, you know, just kind of stuck in the middle of the pack, and they've already invested a lot. So Jake Allen, to me, statistically speaking, he has only his worst years ahead of him. And I think we've seen actually a slight decline in his play, which is surprising, because I thought he was like the X factor for ruining the tank. But no, it is Samuel Montembeau. So Montembeau has been a fantastic story. And I would not even hesitate to get Allen out there. And I know people will say, well, so what, you'll call up Caden Primo? Yeah, I would. I mean, listen, at this point, at his age, you got to see, I know it's been a tough year in the AHL. He had that good playoff run last year, but you have to see what Caden Primo can do. It's kind of one of those crapper get off the pot situations with Caden Primo. So, you know what, it's a baptism by fire, but at this point, it's not like you're ruining a first round pick. If it goes wrong, he was a seventh round pick and he's been a pro for about 5 years now. I wouldn't hesitate to do that. And that would increase your odds of drafting one of those really exciting players that are available in the upcoming draft.
And the very exciting thing for me as a scout with this draft class is it's not a thing of like Bedard or bust, right? It's not like it's, oh, you pick number one or everything after that is awful in comparison.
Oh, God, no.
Right? But the exciting thing here is as long as the Habs pick top 10, even extend that to top 15, you are getting a player that in my view
would have been top five the year before. Yeah.
Like it's more top three. For me personally, if I look at my current ranking of the 2023 draft class, Yuri Slafkovsky would come in around the 15 mark.
Yeah.
Which is insane. Right. Right? Like just thinking of the fact that a the best team to miss the playoffs could get a player comparable to the first overall pick from 1 year before. Mm-hmm. That is absurd, right?
Insanely
stacked draft.
Even getting Fantilli second, like that would be. I mean, I'm not saying it's definitely going to be him. It could be Mitchkov or whatever, but
it'll be like I'm
that's
sure
a Fantilli that's a first overall in other years, right? No matter what, yeah.
Like Fantilli would go first overall. I think Jack Hughes is the one toss up there, but Fantilli's a lot bigger. And I think that could have also been like the deciding factor between Hughes and
keep Fantilli. In mind here, Kent Hughes has been actively looking for a third first rounder, which I think we actually have to, you know, we've been really, it's still honeymoon phase with Kent Hughes, but the fact that he's already brought in two additional first round picks and he's still aiming for another one has been fantastic work. Not all his trades have been amazing. For example, the Lehkonen trade, I was kind of underwhelmed. Obviously the Kulak trade turned out pretty good given who they selected, but if they can get five first rounders over 2 years, I mean, that is unheard of work. And I know nobody loves Marc Bergevin, but you do got to give him credit in the sense that he didn't mortgage the future, right? He didn't empty the cupboards before going. So I think Hughes has really done a fantastic job just turning a, let's be perfectly honest, very poor prospect pool with almost no development, no semblance of development, into something that can probably float this franchise for quite a while. And you're seeing, listen, we already have Owen Beck and Lane Hudson from this draft that are defying all expectations. You got Meshaw, who he's getting a little cooler, you know, with the Rangers, but still great. And you have a guy playing in the NHL. That's your first four picks for 1 year. I mean, right now, Kent Hughes is on pace. And I think we also have to give credit to Jeff Gordon on pace to becoming one of the smartest GMs, not just for trades, but for scouting and for, you know, drafting quality players.
And then in the draft, you have Vinny Rohrer, who looks way better than I thought he would. Cedric Gagnon, I think will be, like, I don't really know about Emmett Croteau. I haven't seen him at all since the draft.
Mm-hmm.
But he had, like, the best numbers in the USHL, and that was, like, an .897 save percentage.
The USHL is hilarious for goaltending.
Yeah, yeah. No, that, I mean, I don't love the idea of spending anything over a six-round pick on a goalie, but, you know.
I mean, this draft, you're kind of lucky there because, like, I just made my top 30, my top 22.
Yeah.
I have two defensemen, no goalies. And if I went to 50, I think I'd have one goalie and, like, four defensemen.
There are a few goalies, actually, this year. There's a lot more, good goalies in this draft than there were last year.
The thing is, there's always goalies that come on the market, right? It's one of the market inefficiencies because, listen, you have six spots for goalies that are signed pro contracts, right? Obviously, the ECHL team kind of signs their own. So really, you only have about three or four spots. And then, you know, the odds of these guys actually making it, and I prefer to draft out of Europe because you get the additional years. But it's just a market inefficiency. There are too many goalies, and it just doesn't feel like you're going to get a solid return on investment. You know, wasn't there a pretty decent goalie just in the market recently? It always seems like there's the next big guy ends up being on the market a year later. So, you know, the Canadiens will have to get a starter, a bona fide starter.
And Carey Price say
is not out of the Carey Price isn't out yet, but they have to get one, right? Like, I don't know if you guys agree. Like, there's I don't think Verbetic or Dobish or Dikau have starter potential quite yet.
Dobish is the best of the bunch.
Yes, yes. Dobish has been, he's been crazy inconsistent. He'll go 970 for a month. And then his last two games were great. Before that, he was under 850 for about four games, right?
Yeah.
So but what I do love about him, I don't know if you have a chance to speak to him. He is a firecracker. He wants to do good. He's pretty intense. He's got that Patrick Roy, like, I want to be the best vibe about him. So that's interesting.
I mean, like, I think
the
best
goalie from the 22 draft.
Pardon me?
Wasn't even drafted. I think the best goalie from the 2022 draft wasn't even drafted.
I agree.
Oh, Don Levi? Oh, no.
No, from 2022.
Oh, okay.
The best one. Hugo
Haviland.
Yeah. He had a tremendous U18s and for Sweden, like one gold with them. Yeah. But he's undersized. He's like, what, 5'9", 5'10"?
Okay, but and we've gotten to the point that, yes, I know, just speaking ergonomically, big goalies, like, wingspan is important. I think that's one stat we don't talk about enough.
Oh, for sure.
We talk about height, but wingspan is incredibly important. Obviously, with goalies, I mean, that's Carey Price's career in a nutshell, is he's got fantastic wingspan. But you look at a guy like Devin, who we all saw him on that Lane Hudson goal when he's had a great year Northeastern again. It just blows my mind that a guy like this, you know, when he was playing in the CCHL, was putting up record-breaking numbers, and he fell to what, almost the last guy in his draft year. That's nuts. And now he's pulling a 950 in college two years in a row.
And he's from Montreal. I really wanted the Habs to pick him that year. The year before that, I wanted the Habs to pick Dustin Wolf. Those are like the two only times in my life that I've swung accurately on goalies. Because goalies are so weird to scout. Like,
I'll tell you this real quick about because the Canadians at one point they were leading up to the draft, and, you know, there's always pressure about the Quebec factor. You know, the Quebec factor, it makes sense. You know, the French factor. I'm a francophone. I get it. But then there was that little where I think it was so unfair. But when Dano got injured, there were no francophones playing. There were francophones on the roster, but everyone got really, like, intense about it. So the Canadians actually asked me to write an article about who is available from Quebec, and it wasn't a great year, I'll be perfectly honest. But I put his name on there, and then I got asked to take it out. So I think they were actually looking. I don't know why, but I'm pretty sure they were actually looking at him at one point. It's just a little disappointing they didn't see. When we talk about it's good she knew there, that's what he is. But anyways, all this to say, they're calling him small. The guy's 6 foot. Like, I mean, can we, you know, he's
it's
not.
It's all relative with goalies, right? Like, everyone asks, like Yusuf Saros is like a gnome, but he's not.
Which...
He's taller, isn't he? I'm pretty sure he's taller than 5'9".
Is he?
He's sewering my fantasy team this year.
Oh, yeah.
I thought he was like 5'10", 5'11".
Well, and it's funny because, I mean, how tall is Sidney Crosby?
He's 6 foot, isn't he?
He's 5'10", man.
Okay, you see Saros 5'11".
So
And no, but yeah, exactly. The reason, just like you said, just going back to it, it's
everyone
okay.
Everyone thinks he's 5'9", but he's 5'11".
They say Crosby's 5'11". I'll tell you right now, that's a lie, because like when I look at him in the eyes without skates, we're at the same level. And for example, David Dernier, they used to say he's 5'6". That's a lie, man. 5'6" with skates on a stool, sure. But
really,
there's just this weird perception when it comes to players that anyone under 6 is bad. I'm going to put it, and obviously with goalies, I think it has a little more merit. But I will actually say this. Anyone over 6 foot is the person that I'm worried about, because statistically speaking, they're the ones that struggle. So, you know, I know that everyone talks about size, but smaller players tend to do better in the NHL. So, and that's just a fact. You know, I love that everyone goes after the 6'5" forwards. We're seeing guys like Tage Thompson. Okay. Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah.
And maybe Slafkovský's got moves, but historically speaking, how many 6'4" and taller forwards in the NHL have done well? There's Mario Lemieux. End of list. You know, like that's, you know. So yeah, I love that the Habs didn't hesitate when it came to size, especially with guys like you know, we're talking about this draft. Rohr was called undersized. Obviously, Lane Hudson was undersized, yeah. But you know, that's how you make your home runs in the NHL. And it's absolutely ridiculous that since the DeBrincat trade or draft, that we haven't gotten it through our thick skulls. You know, we know this is what's going to happen, but then they get to the plate and they're like, no, we're going for the big goof there. We're going to go for the guy that can you know, reach the top shelf in the kitchen. So thankfully, the Habs, there's absolutely no, like, I know Kent Hughes talks about size and all that. The drafting team and development team does not give a darn about size. And that's intelligent. You're taking advantage of a market inefficiency.
Honestly, exactly. You just mentioned the Brinket, and I saw like the funniest tweet I've seen in a while today. And it has no relevance to the podcast, but the Chicago Blackhawks are the 30th ranked team. Mm-hmm. And they traded Alex DeBrincat to a team that's rated lower than them.
poor guy, eh? Out of the frying pan into the kitchen. You know what I was looking at right now? Do you know how many? And I think I criticized the Blackhawks for getting rid of Kirby Doc. Hey, I'm gonna change the subject. Sure. You know, when the Kirby Doc trade happened, like, I actually loved that the Habs got a first rounder for Romanov. To me,
yeah, that was huge.
And yeah. And you know, we talk about guys like Edmondson. That's how they're going to get good value, because they see guys that hit and they're like, oh my God, I need him. I got to have him. But that being said, Kirby Doc could have fit into the rebuild. I thought it was a little silly that they got rid of him.
Yeah.
And I actually think,
however,
the Blackhawks got the better side of that deal with Frank Nazar. Now he's injured. His D plus one is going to be rough, right? He's losing a whole year, but that was a home run for the Blackhawks.
Home run pick. I mean, this podcast is very much a Frank Nazar fan podcast. I ranked him second.
The way I've rationalized it for myself is the Habs would have taken Lekkerimäki.
Yeah, or exactly. Me too. Like, Austin, which I would have been happy about. We're like, well, within
before
the
I forget. Before I forget, and this is a little bit of tidbit of information that I know for a fact, the Canadians weren't 100% on Hudson or Beck either, right? By the way, there was a lot of internal debate whether or not those guys came on the board. So it goes to show they were just a hair away from having a bad draft. But anyways, getting back to all this, is Kirby Doc right now, obviously he'd be leading them in scoring, but do you know how many players the Blackhawks have over 10 points after a quarter of the season?
Three.
Yeah. That's cool. You know, obviously there's the two, but do you know who the third guy is?
Max Domi.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So anyways,
Domi, it's coming.
But you know what? It's funny, because I was criticizing them for getting rid of Doc, because I didn't think he could make enough of an impact to ruin your tank while also being young enough. But I think it was the right move in their case. And, you know, I don't think the Canadians assumed that he'd be this good or find this kind of chemistry so quickly with Caulfield and Suzuki. So, you know, but hey, man, we talk about the importance of, a lot of people get worried about the next draft. Yeah, I get it. Drafting's important, but this is what you want to see, right? You want to see a line where Suzuki's the oldest guy on it at 23 in your top line. Like, that's amazing. You have four rookies. Like, I don't think we talk about it enough. Four rookies on the blue line. Like, there was an era where you wouldn't see four rookies in a decade, you know? So to me, that's just they rolled the dice this year. They gambled and they kind of hit on a lot of them, and it's kind of ruining the tank. But that's fine, because you want to see that development. You want to see the development, right? That's the whole point.
Yeah. If it's any indication of how well the line's doing, I just bought NHL 23, and on my newest Habs roster, it's from last week, Suzuki's an 86, Caulfield's an 84, and Doc's an 81. If I were to buy the game this week and start the same franchise, everybody got a 2-point bump. Like, it's going so quickly.
Well, and as much as I like Kirby Doc, first of all, his controlled entries are just beautiful. He plays a lot like Tatar in the neutral zone, not style-wise, but the way he controls it. He essentially controls the pace through the neutral zone, and we've seen it. Every line he's on, the numbers. Like, you know, I think Caulfield and Suzuki, now they were with Josh Anderson, Mr. I destroy all underlying numbers, but they were controlling what, 30% of the high danger chances. They were expected goals of 25%. Like, that's with Nick Suzuki, right? Like, we know that he can play well. Now, Suzuki and Caulfield have never had great numbers together. That's the other side of it. So Doc has been amazing, but to me, it's the story of this year. Yes, Caulfield scoring goals. Yes, Doc has been great, but this is Nick Suzuki putting the NHL on notice, saying, I am a star player, like, not just defensively, but offensively. He's so creative. He's so smart. And, you know, also with the pressure of being the youngest captain in franchise history, the most paid forward in franchise history, he's taken it on so well. And he's also developed that side that where he's dealing with the community, being great to fans. So, you know, Nick Suzuki, which I will admit, I wanted Cody Glass at the time. I was telling Nick Suzuki's mom, because she came on my podcast the other day. I was like, yeah, I actually trashed your son the night of the trade, you know? And she's like, oh, geez. But, you know, his ascension to being a star player, and I get it. He's not going to shoot 20% forever. But, you know, a lot of people are trying to poo-poo on his ascension as a star player in the NHL. And that's unfortunate, because he is such a smart player, so fun to watch. And he's just so good for hockey. It's really unfortunate that there's been so much pushback on his big season so far. I really think that
he's not gonna
should be spoken about a lot more. You know,
he's not gonna shoot 20% forever, or will he?
Oh yeah, yeah. Unless you know,
He does.
Let's talk about that, because I think, listen, Dom got a lot of criticism for that. Now, it was more the way he reacted to it. Like, listen, I get it. Yeah. Once in a while, when you put analysis, you take one on the chin. Even if you're gonna be right at the end of the year, during the year, you have to take it on the chin. I mean, I suggested trading Josh Anderson, and he scored 2 goals that game. You're right. You know, like, or 2 goals in the next 2 games. So once in a while you take a loss, but when looking at those models, and I think they're fantastic, I'm not trying to discredit any kind of analytical model or anything like that. You have to account, first of all, for outliers. That's just a core part of data analysis, but also let's keep in mind here, our data for Nick Suzuki is based on what? One of the worst seasons in the history of the franchise, right?
Yeah.
This is a guy about to hit his prime that never had a proper line in the entire NHL. So, you know, there is some context that is important that can't be included in those algorithms that I think explain why he's been just excellent. Like, for once, he's on an offensively oriented line that, you know, that actually knows how to pass. No offense, Josh Anderson. And, you know, it's been going quite well just because he's so intelligent. Really, I find it unfortunate that the whole talk about his shooting percentage came into play, but that's what should have happened. The thing is, what did happen was different. So we'll cross that bridge when he gets there, when the shooting percentage collapses. But for now, these things are in the history books. They're not getting erased. So, you know, it's shame to, I know it'll upset some people, but what, he's on a 100-point pace, and that's the fact right now. Yeah. That's what we can go on.
Look, if we're looking at unsustainable shooting percentages, I feel like Rem Pitlick is the best case we have on our
roster. Oh my God, last
he's
year.
He's 30% last year, wasn't
30, 37
now, now, or something? Now, do you guys have that? Because I don't have it in front of me, but I'm pretty sure every guy in the top 10 for goals, except for Caulfield actually, is at about 20%. Connor McDavid, I think, is like 24%. And obviously, you're not going to tell Connor McDavid that he should be shooting less, but he should. Carlson's at what, like 30%? So inflated shooting percentages is how people become goal scoring leaders in the NHL. You know, it doesn't
especially early on in the season.
Exactly, exactly. Now, and here's, it could maintain to the end of the year. We don't, it probably won't. It probably won't. But we've seen guys get huge contracts for maintaining a ridiculous shooting percentage throughout their entire season. So yes, he should score less, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he will score less.
And kind of a weird case there. I feel like St. Louis signed 2 unsustainable shooting percentage players to $65 million deals.
Yeah, who was the – one of them was
– Jordan Kyrou and Robert Thomas.
One of them was like 32%, you know. Well, Robert Thomas, I think that was probably –
an amazing player.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Jordan Kyrou is looking a little shaky.
Yeah, well, and you're going to see more teams do that. You know, for example, like what was the Tage Thompson contract per?
7,140,000+.
Okay. So, oh, I'm just looking at it now. Okay. So, and they signed that when? Was that the beginning of this year?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It was in the offseason.
Well, August there. Okay. So, we're going to see a lot more teams take gambles with their younger players and try to lock them down longer. And first of all, like, I mean, to me, Tage Thompson just breaks my mind. That guy that big shouldn't be able to move that fast. But we're seeing teams figure out. And one of the biggest issues that you're hearing around the league is veterans getting squeezed out. And it sucks. It's tough, man. Because as an athlete, when you get told, like, your body's not good enough for us, that means, like, you're getting forced retirement. But teams have figured out that you spend your money on the kids. And now with Caulfield and Slafkovsky and obviously Harris and all them coming up, I think the Habs are in a pretty good situation to put money in the right areas. You know, no more signing 29-year-old free agents that are, you know, coming off a career year that are about to, you know, dissipate into the ghost of the former selves. That's like, that's
Mark, what I mean. How long do you think Jordan Howard signs for? Because he's also an RFA at the end of the season.
Ooh.
Yeah, well, they burned a year last year, right?
Yeah.
I'm gonna seem smarter and, by bringing up.
And he was always gonna be a 2-year contract because he finished out college.
I know for a fact he's an RFA.
No, absolutely. I think they're gonna obviously avoid. And I want to say one thing. I know a lot of people said the only reason Harris signed was because of Kent Hughes. That's not true.
Isn't it the opposite?
The reason that he actually hesitated was because Marc Bergevin got fired. So they always had a relationship, a really strong one, and it was always understood he was going to go to college for 4 years because the Harris is very smart family, like you're cerebral, like really brilliant people. But Kent Hughes coming in was actually a wrinkle in the plans. Now, that being said, Kent Hughes will never have an issue signing a guy because he's a player agent, right? He knows how to play that game. But I mean, with Harris, I'd like to see him do well away from Kovacevic, and not that he hasn't in this limited time, but I'd like to get more data, like from a different defensive partner. But I wouldn't hesitate to give him a 5 or 6 year deal at something reasonable at the 3.5 right now. You know, like I know that seems like a lot, but to me, you're buying prime years. And I don't think there's much that Jordan Harris does poorly right now. He's your hybrid defenseman that you want all over your lineup.
He's a perfect number 4, right? Like you can play with anyone. In a pinch, you can play on the top pair. You can play either side of defense, right? Like,
well, I still want to see him on the power play. Come on. Actually, he got a few shifts, though, right?
And he's so deceptive with the puck on his stick and so intelligent in his puck movement. Well, like no, you don't want him on a first power play if you're a contending team.
No, but I mean, he was a QB for Northeastern.
Yeah, tremendous. Yeah.
Well, maybe not last year, but the year before that where he, you know,
his junior year.
Best power play QBs in the NCAA, right? So,
for sure.
Now my question is, yes, Harris gets to be signed, but you also have to take care of what Kovacevic still has his 3 years, right? He has another 3 years.
He has 2 more years after this one.
That is such an amazing grace period for the Canadiens.
At 766.
Yeah. Oh my God. Just to figure out how long, you know, you keep him around. Because in my estimation, in my opinion, which is quite wrong quite often, I would say Kovacevic should figure in your plans for the future, at least for the time being. He's shown that. I mean, thank you, Winnipeg. Like, thanks for developing him and then handing him over. But he's not a guy that'll blow you away when you're watching him. But statistically speaking, Jonathan Kovacevic has been Montreal Canadiens' best defenseman and like by a country mile. Obviously, the pairing with Harris has been huge. But, you know, if you can keep those two together and keep having great numbers, and it's not like they're being sheltered. So, yeah.
No, I think it was goals saved above replacements. He's like third out of all rookies.
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah. And I mean, he's an intelligent player. He's got the skill. He's got the drive. He's a nice guy, too. You know, I wouldn't hesitate to sign him a long term. Now, I'm terrible when it comes to what players are worth or whatnot. Like, I would probably get up to Cole Coffey and be like, here's 10 million times to 8. Do you want this? You know, like, I feel like this is more than fair. But, you know, I think if you can get Harris on a 4 or 5 year deal at a reasonable price, you take that gamble.
Honestly, you say that about Cole Caulfield. But during the Jason Robertson process, there were some ridiculous numbers out there. Like I heard Mitch Marner being thrown out as a comp. And
well, I mean, Jason now, Robertson,
I mean, look, it's ridiculous stuff.
Jason Robertson might be a top 5 player in the NHL, though. That's the crazy part.
He's 23 years old.
has what, 16 goals and 31 points in 20 games this season. He's playing like a top player in the league right now.
Yeah. Oh, no, no. Okay, good. So I'm glad. Yeah. And he's the only Robertson that's good in the NHL. So the, sorry, Lisa.
I'll give Nick a break.
Poor Do you guys remember? Do you guys remember when the Leafs fans were comparing? Like, listen, I don't want to laugh at them because Leafs fans, what the thing is, they're dead inside, right? So it's really tough to get at them. And I give them credit for that because
I live with one, so I can confirm that.
Okay, yeah. Like, there's nothing you can say that'll hurt them more than what the Leafs have already hurt.
Yes. Oh, for sure.
But I kind of want to go back and take a look at all those Robertson's going to be better than Caulfield things. Because, yeah, it looked bad under Schaum, but...
And then wait, trade Caulfield for Wayne Simmons.
Well, yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah.
No, it was Nick Suzuki, actually.
Yeah, no, Caulfield was for...
Was it some
trade straight out of, like, 1984 like there. You know what I mean? Like, we're getting, like, Dave Babish for, like, a third round.
Yeah.
Like, it was such a 80s... But it just goes to show, I will say
$4 under the cap. It's such an embarrassing
thing. It's
no, it was Palmieri. It was Caulfield or Palmieri.
That's somehow that was worse. The one. Like, geez.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that we see young, smart people like you three, you know, putting the effort in there, because the level of analysis in hockey, in my opinion, is not it doesn't respect the sport. It's almost insulting to the sport itself, and it's not respectful of the fans. For the longest times, fans were treated like idiots, and yeah, I, you know, a lot of them are. I am. But that being said, there's a smarter breed of fan out there, and with all this information at your fingertips, you get embarrassed when you start putting stuff up like that. It's not the first time you said that, and we don't need to talk about who it was. No. Everyone knows, but it's been going on for 20 years. So I'm glad that there's getting pushback about stuff like that, because
I wouldn't know. I got blocked.
Well, there you go. I'll say this. I'm one of the first person that blocked me was Bruce Garriott.
Classic.
Yeah. Well, because he was suggesting,
he's on my bucket list.
He was suggesting Subban was going to get traded to like Colorado for P.A. Parente or something stupid. Like it was stupid. And I just responded with Malkin to the Kings question mark, which was a story that he ran with like 5 years before.
Oh my God.
Twitter. And he was guaranteed it. He put it in print and then he blocked me. And I was like, okay, yeah, good. Good. I deserve it. But it goes to show, like, these guys have been putting this garbage out there for a long time. This isn't anything new. So I'm really glad to see, you know, there's people like Shayna, there's people like Allison, like just really smart people out there.
Yeah.
And I think hockey fans deserve that level of intelligent analysis.
For sure. And before we delve into the final segment of this first episode with Mark, because we do have a second episode with him lined up, we have a quick little ad read.
I don't think that any of us could have bet that the last two games would have went the way they went. But if you want to place the bet, DraftKings Sportsbook is the place to go. Hockey fans, light the lamp this winter with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. New customers can bet just $5 pregame money line on any NHL team to win any game and get $150 in free bets if they do. If that wasn't enough excitement, you can turn small bets into bigger payouts with same game parlays. Combine multiple bets like which team will win, how many goals will be scored, and more for your shots and an even bigger payout. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now, use promo code THPN, bet $5 on any NHL team to win their game, and get $150 in free bets if they do. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code THPN. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details. It's a big word.
You were right there.
And it is also, to me, kind of funny that we had the 17-year-old read out.
Yeah, I'm not even legally allowed.
You're not of age yet.
Well, I mean, it's kind of funny to me that right now, even the Habs first line, if they go to a casino, I think it's only Suzuki that's legally in the States is legally allowed to gamble. So yeah, there's been a bit of a youth movement all over, not just the writers, but the hockey players as well.
Yeah, for sure. And on that note, Habs prospects. I think, I'm personally most excited in this topic to talk about the guys that aren't in the NHL yet. But let's start with the guy that is. Yuri Slafkovský, the first overall pick from this past draft. Mark, what are your thoughts on like how he's been doing this season, and perhaps just the decision to pick him in the first place?
Well, okay, it was actually a funny night because when we were preparing, I was working for the Canadians at the time. So we were trying to come up with like cool stuff. Like, for example, if Shane Wright would have been drafted, we'd have given him a guitar, you know, because he could play or stuff like that. We just wanted to do something cool. You know, we wanted to get him to taste Putsin or whatnot. But I went on this long spiel about why they shouldn't draft Yuriy Slafkovsky. Like our marketing team was all in the main office. We're all sitting around a table. And I spent a good 10 minutes just saying, this is a terrible idea that they're even considering him. Like, are you not looking at his historical scoring pace? Are you not overvaluating what he did against lesser nations, you know, in World Cup and the Olympics? So everything I said negative about him, and it was a rant, it was like one of my epic rants, I turned it around, and as soon as the Canadians drafted him, I just said the opposite. I literally just said the opposite. Like, I just flipped it around completely because it was fresh in my mind. But I had to, you know, I'm used to translating from English to French and French to English, but I had to translate from negative to positive in that respect. However, I will say this, man, I get why people are excited about him before the draft. His skill set. His skill set is...
For sure. The tools.
The raw tools, the raw skill is you know... one of, you know, God's prototypes, right? Like too rare to live, too weird to die, you know? And if you can get that, I think what Kent Hughes and all them said was pretty intelligent. And I'm so glad that guys like Adam Douglas are involved, or Nicholas is involved right now, but they weren't drafting the best player now. They're drafting the best. And you know what? He actually might've been the best player now, but they want him to be good, you know, down the road. And as much as I want to see him get more ice time, listen, this idea of playing on the fourth line is silly to me. It's silly. Listen, it's a rotating cast of rejects on the right side. Evans has done what he could, but he also gets a rotating cast of players. I'm big on the idea that if you want a guy to emulate someone on your roster, play him with him. That's the best way to learn. So this idea of him, like, I can look up his ice time right now just so I can seem a little more intelligent.
It's been tough. Like, I also, before the season started, I put out like a prediction of like the Habs roster for like opening night. And I put Slafkovsky on the fourth line in my prediction. I did not want him there. I want him in the AHL. I still want him in the AHL, but I put him on the fourth line. I got absolutely clowned. I got approximately like 15 comments calling me an idiot because the Habs would never be dumb enough to play him on the fourth line. And look at where we are now. He's been on the fourth line for basically the entire season.
I think we can actually honestly say the 2022 draft was one of the first in the history where there really weren't any NHL ready players. Let's be perfectly honest. Like Slafkovsky's done okay.
I would say there was one, and
everyone thought it was right,
NHL.
But
Marco Kasper. I think Marco Kasper is the only NHL ready player from that draft class.
A lot of people told me Shane Wright was, and he was not. No. And I will say this, OHL, you know that OHL, dirty 100%. Look he gave to the Habs? I get it, man. I absolutely do get it. Why? Like I wouldn't want him to just roll over. That's good and all, but all this to say is that Slafkovsky, I think, has shown flashes of brilliance. What I really like is that he improves upon weaknesses fairly quickly. You know, stuff like keeping your head up, stuff like not trying to deke five players, stuff like not being a chaotic factor when you don't have the puck. Because when Slafkovsky doesn't have the puck, he's low-key on the ice. Like, he sends everything in the chaos. He really doesn't know where to go. But that being said, he improves on his weaknesses. Very encouraging. But the fact that they didn't send him to Laval, now they still can. That's no issue. But to me, you have to guarantee more than 10 minutes of ice time, right? Like, I get it. He's 18. You want to take it slow. And right now, the Habs are desperately trying to get rid of guys like Dadonov and Hoffman and, you know, all the expensive veteran wingers. But I don't think it's worth it to get, let's say, a difference between a second and third round pick if you're gonna ruin half a year of his development. Now, ruin is a strong word, but they've been taking it slowly. But at this point, in my opinion, you got to bring it up a notch because, you know, first of all, he needs to shoot more. But to shoot more, he needs to have better teammates. He needs to take more offensive zone starts. He needs to be on the power play. Like, he does need an increase in usage because he's proven that he can do good with 10 minutes a night. Like right now, he's what? He's got what, 5 points in 15 games? Is that it?
I think, didn't he notch his third assist? I think he may be up to 6 points.
Okay, either way.
But around there.
You're looking at what, like a 30 point prorated or so, 25 to 30.
Pretty
point.
Similar pace to Kotkaniemi in his rookie year,
I'd
say.
Yeah, which is, and if we look at them Kotkaniemi actually outproduced in his draft year, outproduced Slafkovsky by a significant margin. So, and that was one of the biggest things I was looking at. Like, geez,
that doesn't scare me at all.
Yeah, yeah, that not one bit. And also, I wouldn't mind talking about Kotkaniemi. I've been keeping an eye on him. I don't get that player, but anyways, going back to Slafkovsky, I think you take it slow. But when you make decisions to not send him to Laval or not send him to Europe, that to me has to come with a caveat that says you're going to give this guy ice time. Because again, who cares if you get a third round pick instead of a second round pick for Danov? Honestly, who gives a crap? That doesn't matter. What matters is how this player is going to develop. So they took it slow and steady. They took the slow cooker route, you know. But at this point, I think he's definitely ready for an increase in ice time because he needs to be challenged with his decision-making, my opinion. I don't know if you guys agree, is his biggest flaw. Like, he doesn't process the game as quickly as you'd like. You know, his physical skills are there, but the computer between his shoulders isn't quite there yet. And to me, you're only really going to get better by playing better opponents, playing with better teammates, learning, you know, baptism by fire. That's the choice they took. So you might as well see what he can do with the next step.
My position on Laval has changed a lot because of the way Laval is performing. I'd rather...
Oh, like hot garbage? You mean like hot garbage? Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want to see any of these players touched by JF Hull. I am happy that they're here with St. Louis and Adam Nicholas.
I'll say this about JF Hull. He's a better coach than what was the guy that was a lot like Blaine? Me? He talked too much there. Joël Bouchard. He's a much better coach than Joël Bouchard when it comes to X's and O's. It's not just a lot of rah-rah, let's go, you know, go red, go. But that being said, yeah, we're starting to see some deficiencies at this point. Obviously, there's a preference to keep local guys in the lineup. I get that, but that's kind of counterintuitive to, to developing your players. So in my mind, you know, when we're talking about Méchard and people are like, oh, he's not going to get ice time in Laval. Freaking right he will. You go there and you hold JF Hull by the tie. You like staple his tie to the desk until he guarantees you in signing that Philippe Méchard is going to get ice time. I don't care if Danick Martel doesn't get ice time. Like, nobody cares about that guy's ice time. So, you know, this whole idea that if they go to Laval, the minutes aren't guaranteed is crazy to me. Like, you make it happen. First overall pick, you make it happen. But at this point, I don't think he has much left to learn against a lower level competition. I think you only get smarter by playing against better opponents. And it's kind of a yin and yang in the sense that it's a double-edged sword there. But I think that's the next step for Slafkovsky.
I guess the counter argument there would for me would be Slafkovsky has not dominated for a full season in already a few years, right? Like last season in the Finnish Liga, he scored what 8 points in the regular season 10. And added another.
Okay, but 10 as, points, a, right? as a 17-year-old playing pro hockey though, right?
No, for sure. But the argument here is one of the biggest factors in confidence is actually dominating the league, right? And
well, kind of like did, what happened
he,
at the Olympics.
He did that at the Olympics, at the World Championships, right? He was excellent there.
Yep.
For sure. Small samples, but excellent. If you give him a full season against AHL competition, let him learn to play a high skill game on North American ice with less space than he had last season in the Liga. I feel like that's something that will not only build confidence, but will help build some small area skill. Yep. Because one of the biggest things we've seen with him this season is he tries to make these massive dangles that work on European ice because you have a lot more space to work with. Mm-hmm. But North America just is not feasible.
That half second
is constricted.
Is killing him.
It's so constricted.
I agree because I mean I wrote an article for Montreal Hockey Now at the time, basically stating like, you know, if he goes to the AHL, that's fine. He needs minutes, but there's also the risk. And now I agree with what you said there. There's value in confidence. I mean, we're just seeing just the confidence that Martin Saint-Louis has put in the rookies has gone a very long way. You know, for the defensive rookies to perform so well. That being said, what if he goes to the AHL and doesn't dominate? Because then there's your other side of it, right? Like, you actually have a built-in excuse with the Habs. Oh, he's in the fourth line. You know, he's just learning. But if he goes to the AHL, the expectations obviously are that he's going to dominate. And every single guy out there is going to be looking for him because that gets you on the highlight reel when you lay out a guy like Slafkovsky. So I agree with you that there's potential there in sending him to the AHL, especially for confidence. But there's also potential that it backfires. So, you know...
Like, one player that I think would really benefit would be Jack Eye, but now I think he would have a target on his back.
Well, so he's fought. he's fought too much in the NHL that
way
that
much.
Is his reputation.
Okay,
now.
I'm gonna say this. I think like statistically speaking, we're treating Arber Jackeye as a goon. But
no,
and the Habs, well, no, the Habs are like the, okay. I'm gonna say this. I didn't like when Martin Saint-Louis put him in the lineup specifically. Like you knew he was gonna get a black eye from Delary. Like essentially,
yeah,
Martin Saint-Louis agreed to that fight the minute he put Jackeye and said they're tough. So like this kid doesn't need to have multiple brain injuries, you know, before his 22nd birthday. I think the club might be underrating his overall impact. And I know what you're saying, Aaron. Like, he could stand to spend some time in the AHL, but I think in terms of overall, like just his shot share has been one of the best defensemen, and he's been one of the best defensemen getting the pucks on net. So
his possession is
pucks on net is one thing, though, right? Like Joel Edmondson's good at getting pucks on net.
Yeah. So is Jordan Harris, by the way. But yeah, it depends
for sure,
if you're creating rebound opportunities or not. Or yeah.
And if you look at Jackeye's goals this season, they've all been kind of lost from the point. Very similar to the goals that we saw a lot from Joachim Kamel at the beginning of last draft year. Had everyone ranking him at like top three because he scored like what, 8 goals in the first 14 games in the Liga, and half his goals were circling back to the point and lobbing one that kind of
the
in.
David Clarkson effect. Do you guys remember when the Leafs lost their mind and they
yes, of course.
Clarkson.
I've been watching hockey for a year.
Okay, well,
yeah, Aaron's a newbie.
So, and Clarkson was hailed as the new Wendell Clark, who, by the way, he was a guy that was just okay, and he played for the Leafs, and he never really accomplished much. But anyways, so he was tough as nails, though. He was really tough to play against. So the whole thing was that he was a new Wendell Clark. But you go back to all his goals, and do you remember how much he... Oh, I just hit my mute button, sorry. Do you remember how many goals he got the year before he signed? It was something like 40, right?
Yeah, it was like 38 or something. It was high 30s, I'm pretty sure.
Okay, so I went back and I checked David Clarkson every single goal. Like 80% of them were bounced off his leg or a little floaters from the point. And it was okay. I understand that his shooting percentage was normal, but this is where, when you view the video, when you realize like a whole lot of that was fluke, like it really was fluke. So, you know, it just goes to show that, you know, when it comes to getting pucks on net or luck, yeah, in one season, you can have a whole lot of that luck, but it tends to even out throughout your career. So in that respect, let's be honest, Arber Jackeye, what, he's at 3 goals already?
Yeah.
Yeah, he leads like rookie defenseman in goals, I believe.
So you can't.
He has
send
as many
down.
Goals
you
as Tottenham has points.
Down. Yeah.
Which no. Hurts me to say, but yes,
they be having a mid off,
right? Jeez. But that being said, I think at this point, when you've proven that he can kind of hang, I think that boat has sailed. And instead of sending him to the AHL, I agree, Aaron, that there's a lot to learn there. I'm looking at moving a guy like Joel Edmondson or David Savard.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's your ticket. The Habs rookies have played so well that it's actually given the Canadians even more leverage, right? So, yeah. I mean, we talked about it, I think, last show. But Joel Edmondson, to me, odd man out, just because guys like Jackeye, guys like Kovacevic and Harris are playing so well. And Gouley's numbers are atrocious, but he plays
he's
with the guys
amazing.
He plays with a guy that's searching for a lost contact every game. You know, like he's always on the ground.
He spends half the game on his stomach.
Exactly.
So here's what needs to happen, in my opinion. We trade Edmondson, it means Savard gets the A. We trade Savard, does Caulfield get the A?
It's funny, Aaron. I was actually thinking about that yesterday, whether or not Caulfield, because, you know, guys like that don't really get seen as leaders.
Not typically.
But
he wore it in the preseason and it looked so good.
I mean, to me, and this is why I had no issue with Nick Suzuki. Obviously, you know what's funny? I'm going to go real quick with Suzuki is that his mom has been really nice to me. So Amanda Suzuki and Rob Suzuki, the parents, great people. Like she brings me chips from Ontario. So for people listening to this in Ontario, in Quebec, there wasn't any hell of a good dip, which is a thing you can get in Ontario. So she'd bring me Miss Vicky's and stuff, go out in the rain by the Bell Center. And, you know, we just chatted really nice. And I told her at one point, I looked up to her and her husband. I'm like, you know, your son's going to be the captain of this team, right? This is 3 years ago. And their reaction, they looked at me like, yeah, we do. You know, I was like, okay. So there's that calm confidence to Nick Suzuki that maybe you don't see in Cole Caulfield, but if you're going to put your foundation down, and they have, it's on guys like Caulfield. So in my opinion, yeah, absolutely.
And if he's going to be here for another 8 years.
Exactly.
Very true.
His 10. Well, I mean, sign up, you know, if I'm his agent right now, I'm letting every voicemail go to every call from the Habs go to voicemail. I mean,
hey, if I'm Kent Hughes, he's gonna find a way to get that deal done.
Kent Hughes, I'm knocking at his window in his bedroom and being like, sign this, it's $9 million. But I think we're going to see, like, I think it's going to be more than Suzuki. And I know a lot of people said that's not realistic, but it absolutely is, because he's not a complete player like Suzuki. However, Cole Caufield has been great on the forecheck. He's been fantastic in neutral zone. He's been a good playmaker this year. Let's be honest. It's been the evolution of Cole Caufield as a complete player. But Nick Suzuki's obviously more complete, but goals talk, right? So I think Caufield will be starting at what, 8.5 times 8?
I think there's gonna
seven
be
and a quarter.
A very big,
okay. I used to think it was seven, but come on, guys. He's one of the
for
best.
Me,
okay.
My expectation, and I think this is gonna be the final thing for the pod here, because we are running above an hour at this
because
point.
I tend to ramble a little bit, right? Yeah.
But I think that the baseline or the expectation for the Caufield contract is going to be the exact same cap percentage as Nick Suzuki. So
I believe Suzuki's 9%.
Yeah, no. I'm saying like 7.
Oh, okay, yeah, which is fair, because when you look at it this way, those two definitely produce more than 10% of the offense of the team. Like, that's how I always look at it. In French, it's rapport qualité prix, you know, like bang for your buck. I think it'll be at the end of the summer, and he's probably going to end up being the number one 5-on-5 goal scorer in the league. And then you can actually point and say, like, if your power play was good, he'd be even higher, you know? So, I mean, he's got all the leverage in the world. He has all the leverage in the world. And I think he'll get paid more than Suzuki, honestly.
I have done a lot of work in trying to figure out my number. He's going to sign for 8 years at $7,725,000. That's my prediction.
Is that, are you stealing that from the Evolving Hockey Twins?
I think that's usually what I do.
Way
lower. Because my logic here, Tage Thompson, who scored 38 goals, signed for $50 million. He's a center. That's a better position. Tim Stützle's contract is really going to mess things up. So is Matt Barzal's. Larkin is going to be interesting. That's going to be a comparable. So is Horvat.
Yeah.
But Caufield, I don't think Caufield should be touching Jack Hughes, which that contract is ridiculous.
Yeah, but well, they'll probably end up getting their best good friends, value out of it. So,
oh, they're going to get amazing. Yes. I just wanted to throw something in because you were name dropping that you have a good relationship with Suzuki's parents. Lane Hudson's dad followed me on Twitter. So if Lane Hudson hits, I hope we become best friends.
You know what's really cool? And like, for example, the rookie tournament, I got a tap on my shoulder. Is Owen Beck's dad and stepmom, you know, like, oh, we love your stuff. And just the other day, at 4 a.m., Cole Caufield's mom liked an article I'd written about, you know, his evolution as more than a goal scorer, which is when he got drafted, John Werbowski came over and hugged him in the middle of the presser. And they're all asking him the dumb questions, you know, the media, the typical crap. Are you excited to play Montreal? So I went back and I talked to Werbowski, who's very great, great coach, good guy. He had, what, 13 guys go in the first round that year?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think he's coaching the USA women's team right now. But anyways, I'm like, man, how did this guy fall to this point? And he's like, it's not just that he's a good goal scorer. He's like, Mark, this kid can set up plays. He can be a good playmaker. He's not big, but he forechecks voraciously. He's smart. So yeah, that was the evolution into him being an all-around player has been exciting. But I think you're low there, Aaron, honestly.
We'll find out. I hope I'm not. Well, because look at the deals Hughes has signed. He's so damn good at making Kirby Dach four times 362.5.
However, that was a gamble. Honestly, that was a gamble when they signed.
No,
him.
It wasn't.
Of course,
even if he was a 3C, that would have been a fair contract.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. But just
we're paying Armia and Byron more than him.
No, well, I'm saying the reason I'm saying is he's coming off an injury-ridden season.
Yes, that's true.
And you didn't know what he looked like. Let's be perfectly honest. But however, guys like him and even. Were you guys expecting Monahan to be able to skate as well as he does? Sometimes injuries pass. So yeah, no, the Kirby Dach thing has been just a master. Like, and again, we're gonna go back to it. I hate that they traded away the 13th overall, but at this point, I think we can say it's actually a good trade for both teams.
I think it's a rare win-win.
Isaiah George at 98.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if the Islanders had like the third round pick or the first.
Oh
pick
yeah,
the
Habs
round,
paid more, right? They sent a third with Romanov, and then they sent a fourth.
No, it was the first pick of the fourth round.
Yeah, so it was expensive,
and with that pick, the Islanders selected Isaiah George, who's one of my absolute favorites. I know I ranked him at like 27.
Seb, every single prospect is your absolute favorite, and I love it. I love it because
I'm talking about the ones I like. I'm glossing over.
And also, it's the few times that we can be like unabashed excited about is guys that aren't in the NHL. So I love it too. Yeah.
And it's funny with Isaiah George because I think he's at like 2 points or something this season in the OHL playing for the London Knights. And everyone's like, oh, such a bad pick. And it's something. And I mean, watch the guy play. He's the Callum best Ritchie. Skater in the entire OHL. He's amazing.
Every time I put Callum Ritchie at five, everybody's like, he has 14 points in 19 games.
He's so
I'm like,
good.
Points Callum do Ritchie. Not tell the whole story.
Well, yeah. And so are we ending this episode soon? Because I have one little rant about points tell. Don't tell the whole
go
story.
Go for it. It's fine for like
leave it at the rant. So to the listeners,
come back for a Logan, a rant about why it's important watching these prospects and why Logan Mailloux needs to be evaluated properly.
Oh, I'm excited to partake in that one. So on that note, thank you so much for listening to this episode 8 of the Puck and Roll podcast season 2. And thank you, Mark, for joining us. And we will see you again on Sunday for the second part of this episode.
I demand mangoes as payment.
Mangoes shall be provided.
Yeah, but a tough lull. Not none of them Tommy Atkins garbage there. I want the good stuff.
I have some frozen mango in my freezer. I'll bring it to you.
Oh, God.
Aaron, no, go get them immediately.
I mean, listen, we all have frozen mango in the freezer. I'm talking about the fresh stuff, the good stuff. This podcast was brought to you by Big Mango.
Song for the broken hearted.